Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features swift rinse tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When MLB talent takes the field, reactions get loud.
Aaron Judge with a blast. Oh my God!
Whole scheme.
Struck him out with 102.
Laser beam. Walk off, baby! This is the best.
Witness baseball greatness for yourself at the ballpark. Yeah! Baseball is something else.
Yes!
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day! Great day! Oh, give me some juice, baby!
Oh, yeah!
Let's do it!
Time with a 2-2 count here. High drive to center, but he got under it. Lawrence Butler moves towards the track in left center to put it away for the final out of the inning. A walk, one man left on base. Astros lose the first game of this four-game series by the final score of 5-2. Mason Miller comes on for a four-out save to lock it down for Luis Severino, who gets the win tonight.
My biggest takeaway from today was very competitive on both sides of the ball. You saw, see offense making some plays there in the passing game and, bust a run open there. And defense, right, really competing, making plays as well. I think the highlight of the day for me was Petrie, all right, being in a really good spot to intercept the football. Just continue. He's been a guy who's been very consistent for us, no matter where we put him, what we've asked him to do. He's just – my type of player. He's all over the field, always up for the challenge. Whatever the down is, like, he's going to be around the football making plays, and it was evident today.
Hi, there you go. Todd Callis on the call in that first cut. Astros lose last night 5-2 to the A's to open up a four-game set with them. And, of course, that was D'Amico Ryans, head coach of the Texans, that we heard in that second cut there, talking about takeaways from day two, a day that the defense won fairly convincingly out at Texans training camp. As we emerge live from Texans training camp day three today, I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm awake because I was trying to figure out why D'Amico, after we played the Astros low light, I was trying to figure out why D'Amico was commenting on the Astros game late at night.
I thought the same thing. I didn't think that when I put those sequentially in the rundown to bump into the show, it didn't dawn on me that D'Amico might sound like he's describing the Astros game.
I thought we should have D'Amico do the sports minute for you.
I know.
Just once. That would be fun. Hey, D'Amico, would you mind at 11 p.m.? Doing a quick breaking down film or whatever you football coaches do and break that film down. So it was a rough day for Houston sports. The Texans offense did not fare well versus the Texans defense, and the Houston Astros and their beleaguered band of AAA dudes were not able to win either. Two losses on the Houston front.
0-2 yesterday. That's right. Yeah, because I think most people when they come to training camp, as excited as we are about the defense, I know most of the time, like when I see CJ or anybody drop back to pass, I'm rooting for them to complete the pass.
The only time, this is the only time you get excited generally as a fan watching, like if you watch a training camp practice. Saturday, I think, is an open practice. It's yes. That you love incredible interceptions, but only if it's to the backup quarterback and preferably either the third string quarterback or just some, you know, like a Joe Flacco type or something. Where you're like, he is what he is.
Yep.
You go up to Pittsburgh. I didn't, Sean, I was off social media for most of yesterday. Then I click on and immediately the world is aghast and amazed. Or just that Aaron Rodgers threw an interception in training camp.
Doom.
Yeah. Oh, I can't believe he threw an interception in training camp. That's it for Aaron Rodgers. Listen, I'm not optimistic about Aaron Rodgers this year. I don't think he's probably going to be anything close to the version of the Aaron Rodgers he used to be, but it's a training camp interception.
It is. Yeah, dude, social media amps up everything at training camp. All right, so yesterday at training camp, yeah, you heard D'Amico talking about, he was largely talking about Petrie, but it was a pretty good day for the defense overall. I would say just takeaways from day two. Defense won the day. Petrie had the interception on a play where CJ got pressured. There was a lot of that going on yesterday. And he sailed one. He sailed it over the receiver's head, and it was a lot like the interceptions Petrie would get in his – remember his rookie year, he had five interceptions, and they all felt like right place, right time. And that's what Petrie does. Now he plays up close to the line of scrimmage. But yesterday he was kind of playing some center field on that play, got a pick. Jalen Smith, the rookie out of USC, had a nice pass breakup in 11-on-11 drills. Tough sledding running the ball. And I would say the biggest thing, Seth, is that if you had any concerns that Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter, and Will Anderson in particular, were not going to terrorize quarterbacks this year, I'm here to calm you down. Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson Jr. is going to end careers in training camp, I fear.
There's as it is with training camp, there's two sides to every blade, because it's the Texans offense that he's doing this against. And I would be the first to usually say, hey, don't read too much into non-padded practices when it comes to pluses or minuses with the offensive line and defensive line. I am a little bit concerned that the offensive tackles and the defensive ends in their battles in pass protection, that's like there's a certain tempo where you can go, and it's a real competition in no pads. Not on the interior as much, but on the outside. The offensive line and the defense, you guys, anybody that, you know, coaches high school football or works with high school kids knows this. You can get some really good work done.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit concerned that the offensive tackles have been getting so thoroughly destroyed by Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. But I am also, I'm pleased, because when you're going in no pads, you take some of the power element out of it. You know, Will's not going to have that many bull rushes or anything.
Yeah.
But that's the part of the game he's been working on, is the non-bull rush type of stuff. So it's a really good sign that he's continuing to develop there. You just kind of wish that, okay, maybe these guys could put up a little bit more of a fight on the offensive side of the ball. Yeah.
Win a rep. How's that sound? Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday after practice talking about Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter.
With Danielle and Will, they just have to continue to be themselves, right, really improve on the small things, and that's really finishing at the top of the rush for a lot of times we've been in the backfield. When I talk about finishing, I'm talking about finishing on the football. Like, how many fumbles can we force as opposed to just sacks? We want to take the football away to put our offense in a good spot. So can we improve in that manner with the rushing? Not just Will, Danielle, but it's all of our rushers.
Yeah.
And that's a big emphasis, and we'll play some audio from D'Amico later about the – when he talks about the top of the rush, that's just when you're within a few steps of the quarterback and getting the ball out. Will Anderson has talked about that in multiple interviews this year, about how there's such an emphasis on getting the ball out, because it's really one of the biggest things you can do to flip the tables in a football game. You get a strip sack. And, I mean, we saw sometimes it's Derek Barnett picking it up and going for a touchdown. But at the very least, a lot of times you end up with a short field. At the very least, you kill the series. It's, like, okay, the offense recovers it, but then it's going to be 3rd and 20. If the defense recovers it, then you flip the field, and it's just huge in a football
game. It's the biggest game-changing play that you can have. Yeah. You know, short of a punt return that goes 85 yards for an actual touchdown. In terms of just plays from the line of scrimmage, non-touchdown plays, that's the biggest play you can have is a strip sack.
It's better than most interceptions, too. Mm-hmm. You know, most interceptions don't make it back to the line of scrimmage. It gets you 10 or 15 yards past the line of scrimmage if you can pick it up. So that's it's nice because you think about some of the great pass rushers of the past. There are guys that have specifically gotten their sack total up because of the strip sack. Like plays where they might not have been able to get the quarterback on the ground, but they've got the hand-eye coordination to get their hand in and get the ball out. It's a learnable and teachable trait. So it's really I get excited just hearing guys talk about it because this is a defense that's shown that they can already produce, but they're just kind of putting a cherry on top of all that.
Yeah, smoothing off the rough edges. I like that. Here's one more from D'Amico Ryans on Will Anderson Jr.
Will. Will is definitely, I think, mature for his age. He's always felt very mature for his age. Even our first time interviewing him on his 30 visit, like for him, he sat down in a room and he really commanded the room, had all great answers. So to see a guy like that is still in his mind looking to grow, looking to become a better, not only player, but a better man off the field, you know, it doesn't surprise me because that's who Will is.
Well, Seth, just a funny thing yesterday, like Will, so our radio tent here is right this year. It's right next to the runway where the players walk out onto the practice field. And so I'm hanging out after the show yesterday, just, you know, BSing with a few people, and the players are starting to come out. And Will Anderson Jr., outside of a football field, is one of the most delightful human beings ever. We've had him on the postgame show probably three or four times since he came into the league. And after a win or after a loss, he's just bubbly and happy and friendly. And so, you know, and I don't spend a lot of time around Will, but I think he would recognize me from the postgame show. And he came walking in yesterday, and there are two Will Andersons, because there's the one off the football field, and the look on his face just walking onto the practice field. He looked like he was ready to murder somebody, and he's just carrying his helmet out to the practice field. And I go, and he kind of looks over at me. I'm like, "Hey, what's up, Will?" And he just glares at me and keeps walking. And I'm like,
He was about to go kill somebody. That's nice,
dude.
That's good.
Johnny and Mark were interviewing Nick Caserio at that very time, right across the runway from me. And I listened to that interview this morning, and it was enough of a look on Will's face where Johnny made a comment on air during the interview, like, "Wow, Will looks serious today."
I always think of with guys like Will Anderson. Do you remember from Full Metal Jacket? You saw Full Metal Jacket,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the movie. Yeah. Long
Matthew
time
Modine
ago.
He has like the one thing on his he has one thing written on his helmet that says kill, 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 but then he also has a peace symbol in the general.
That's him.
The commanding officer is like, "Son, what's going on with you?" And he says, "It's the Jungian things, the duality of man, sir." That's Will. It's the duality of man. He's in touch with the shadow world, but then also his bubbly and effervescent self. When D'Amico was talking about Will being mature, I chuckled because he's kind of mature in a way that sometimes you meet a 55-year-old who has a boyish curiosity and enthusiasm and almost seems like immature in a good way for his age. So Will is mature in that he almost seems childish, but childish in the manner of a 55-year-old man.
He's mature in that I would trust him with anything. I would trust him babysitting my kids. I would trust him driving my car. I would trust him with any decision. I would also trust that he would attack it with the energy and effervescence of like a 9-year-old.
Well, that, man, you hear so many Hall of Famers talk about kind of the keys to what fueled their success or anything like that. And so often curiosity comes up, like staying curious, and that no matter how good you are, if you're just always kind of wanting to learn more, it's a hard trait to define and pin down, but I feel like Will and CJ both have it.
That's
one of the things that makes me most optimistic about their future. I don't ever envision a spot where either of those guys would really become complacent, because they're kind of wired to just want to know more, want to always be tweaking things. And that's that's again goes back to what I like about Caserio and D'Amico as a team. I think they've figured out a way to identify those guys and as much as possible try to get those types of guys on your team. And then, you know, going back to trading up for Will Anderson, it's those traits that just made him different and above and beyond his physical traits.
Totally agree. Totally agree. All right, we're here day three, Texans training camp. They will be out here on the grass again today and tomorrow, off Sunday, and then the first padded practice will be on Monday. Nick Caserio revealed that yesterday with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. So that's what we got going on the plate football-wise. Baseball-wise, let's circle back to the Astros. Last night looked like what I think a lot of us thought a team with 17 guys on the IL would look like. And Titus Howard met with the media yesterday. I am in favor of the new post-Laramie Titus Howard, and you're going to hear a lot of reasons why coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's touch on the Astros real quick. Not a lot to talk about with last night. They lose 5-2 to the Athletics. Look, I'm looking at the box score right now. Partially, Seth, I'm looking at the box score because I fell asleep in the fifth inning of this game, and then Amy woke me up in the ninth inning of this game, and the Astros scored their two runs in the seventh. So I open up the box score. I'm like, well, I at least need to see how they scored their two runs. And when you look at a box score and both runs were driven in by somebody who didn't get a hit last night, like, oh, okay, well, they just drove these runs in by, they happen to have some guys on base and they grounded out, or it was a sac fly or something like that. This is what more of the games we thought might look like when they're missing half of their everyday lineup and you're bringing up Jason Alexander to start a game from Sugar Land. That's what it's supposed to look like.
If you did strictly box score analysis, you'd say, well, I mean, if you had a lineup full of Taylor Trammell's, then you might have won this game. You know, he had three of the six hits in this game came from Trammell, and one of the hits came from Bryce Matthews, who was one for three. So you got a rookie and you got Taylor Trammell that were producing for you, but largely beyond that, there was nothing. I am in that mode right now. The Astros built their lead in the division up to where it is. Yes, the Mariners won last night. Did they not?
Yeah, it's a five-game lead. Yep.
But you gotta playing down to the competition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't exist right this moment.
No.
You gotta be a .500 baseball team until you get some combination of guys returning from the IL and perhaps a trade at the deadline. But it is what it is, Sean. I'll go into coach speak mode.
Hey, real quick, before we get to Titus Howard, if you could pick one guy to make healthy right now and bring back right now that's injured, I think there's three names that would fit that are on the IL right now. You could pick one to bring back this very minute to start tonight against the A's. Peña, Yordan, and Paredes are the three names that pop amongst.
Yeah,
others.
That's I guess boy, but I mean the I, yeah I don't want to get I it's just never I'm never comfortable getting too confident or cocky about, hey, look, you know, actually Brandon Walter is going to be a Cy Young candidate pretty soon.
You might have Javier or Arrigetti in that conversation.
Yeah, but I also you got to remember too that. I build Arrigetti up in my mind to a point that isn't realistic either. That we still really don't know what Arrigetti's going to be as a full-time, year-after-year pitcher. And then Javier likewise. So the three guys you mentioned, the actual position players, that and with Yordan, it really is also that, yeah, I'd love to have him back, which means that his hand is 100% completely healed, and you're not going to see that version of him that we saw when he was quote unquote healthy, or at least playing earlier this year.
I don't think you can make that assumption either. Even once he comes back with this thing, he's even said, Seth, that he might not be 100% when he comes back. It sounds crazy to say this, and if this question had been posed back in April, like, hey, in July these guys are going to be on the IL, which one would you, if you could pick one to come back right now, who would it be? Before the season, it would have been Yordan, no question, because we didn't know this version of Peña existed.
Yeah.
I think right now it's Peña, because I think the injury that he has is going to be one that we're magically healing the injury as well. I don't think that's an injury that's going to hinder him, or we got to worry about a rib for the rest of the year. Whereas with Yordan, I think this hand thing could be something that lingers for the rest of this contract that he's on. Who the hell knows? This has been going on multiple years now with him.
Yeah, and with Peña, I think it's fair to say, hey, because of every reason you just mentioned, that it's a rib, it's not anything that's connective tissue or anything like that. We I don't know. It's also the Astros. It could turn out that he had a spleen removed. We don't, and I don't know how that affects baseball players. So, yeah. But in as long as there's no the permanent internal organ damage or removal, right. I feel like he might actually come back. I don't want to say better because he was one of the best players in the league. But yeah. Some of the things that he worked on in the offseason that very clearly paid dividends during the year, he can kind of just mentally and in the batting cage physically refine those things, the improvements that really mattered in the offseason. Yeah. So, yeah, you take it. The guy, he was a top three player in the league in terms of wins above replacement when he left. Yeah. So that that right now is 100% the guy that you need back the most.
And that's the guy I think you're going to get back. And he's been the catalyst when he's been there in that leadoff spot. I go Peña, Yordan, Paredes would be my power ranking there. All right, let's get to Titus Howard. You and I texted yesterday. I thought the same thing watching Titus's press conference yesterday. And that's what I was looking for, is like, okay, does this feel like a different Titus Howard? Does this feel like a Titus Howard who's not the guy attached at Laremy Tunsil's hip anymore, getting chippy on social media and getting chippy with people thinking that this offensive line actually isn't that good?
And then at times feeling like you're more concerned with fashion week than football. That can a guy kind of emerge as a leader now that he doesn't have guys above him that are the actual head honchos, and
yes,
can he become a different version of himself? And like, so far this entire offseason, it's felt like that's what's happened.
Yeah. Here was Titus Howard yesterday. He met with the media yesterday. This was a good press conference. We've got the highlights for you here. What's changed culturally from last year in the offensive line room?
I think attitude. Everybody, you know, is a competitive group, so you know, everybody go out there and earn the right to play for the Texans. So everybody out on the group has a positive attitude. They're showing up to work every day and just putting in the work and keeping the head down so we can become the best group it is.
It's so funny because there seemed to be some kind of campaign to defend the culture of the offensive line room last year. Yeah. You'd see all these people saying like, oh, these reports of toxicity are out of line. Oh, I don't understand it. And then meanwhile, every time D'Amico gets up to the podium and is asked about the offensive line, he talks about how much better the attitude is and that there needed to be a culture change. And then even Titus Howard will get up and say, yeah, the attitude's a lot better this year.
Just,
there was toxic is such a loaded phrase that I think some people say, no, it wasn't toxic. Nobody was having an affair with anybody's wife or anything. I don't know what you're talking about. There were no blow-ups. But then there's dysfunction, or there's being a non-ideal situation, and that's what it felt like. That offensive line for a few years now has been, for lack of a better word, they've played soft, and there wasn't an element of physicality to the game. We saw some glimmers of it at the end of last season and in the postseason, where they did show a physical element to their game that surprised me. I was happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
And Titus, I think, was a guy that could have gone either way in terms of just how is he going to finish out his career and what kind of a football player do you want to be? I think what I hope is, I think he's really realized, wow, at guard, I can kind of be a pipe swinging badass. You know, I've got the size and the athleticism by guard standards, he's a really impressive athlete.
Yeah.
By offensive tackle standards, he's like, all right, okay. But at guard, he could potentially do some really special things.
Well, I think, too, Titus, you know, Titus got his contract a couple years ago, making $18 million a year. He got paid as an above-average tackle. If he looks at the landscape and says, hey, look, if I can be what you just described, Seth, at guard, I'm not saying he's Trey Smith. I'm not saying he's going to be Trey Smith. But Trey Smith just got $23 million a year to play guard. The guard market is pretty damn good, too, if you're an above-average guard. And Titus will be approaching 30 at that point, so that might be a better spot for him. Hey, Ben, let's skip down because I want to make sure we get to these in this segment, because a lot of talk about the new scheme this year with Nick Caley, Cole Popovich, the coach in that room right now. I want to make sure we get to both of these. This was Titus Howard on the new scheme and the new mindset this year for the offensive line.
The scheme is a lot more simple. I was in this scheme a little bit when I first came into the league. But it's really just, I think the biggest thing with Nick and Cole is the mindset. Like, you know, our mindset last year wasn't like it is this year. Like, our mindset now is we got to get downhill. We got to get on guys early and move them. And that's something that we struggle with on the offensive line of the pass, is getting the run game going. Because you get the run game going, the pass game going to get going. You know, so we got to be able to establish that run early. And they just been attacking the details of the run game and getting double teams a lot. We're going to be doing a lot of double teams. So we're just working on those fundamentals every day and trying to get better.
I think that clip right there, I think for people who are skeptical of having the assistant offensive line coach become the offensive line coach, and they ask, like, well, okay, why would you do that? The guy was in the room last year, and you had all these issues. I can't stress it enough. An assistant offensive line coach has very little power or control over the way things are going to operate in a room. And if the offensive coordinator and the offensive line coach aren't wired the same way you are, you can only do so much.
Yeah.
So I 100% am cool with it. I've seen situations. I was in situations in the NFL where I think the assistant offensive line coach was smarter and better than the offensive line coach,
mm-hmm.
but he couldn't do anything about it, you know, and eventually both those guys that I'm thinking of, I don't want to throw the actual O-line coaches under the bus, those guys would go on to have good careers as offensive line coaches later on.
Yep.
So I'm very open to it. A lot of it with Nick Caley and his influence on it, he feels more blue-collar in a very, very good way. That he is all about old-school physical football and the dividends that can pay in the passing game. I know people get tired of, or people like try to, they love to act like they're intellectuals by saying, oh, establish the run is just old, stupid caveman thinking. And it's because they don't understand the actual way football works on the ground level and how it affects linebackers, how it affects safeties when you have a really good rushing attack. Yeah, it does. Establishing the run does help out the passing game. And you're an idiot if you think it doesn't.
Yeah.
You can point to all the stats and you're interpreting them wrong. Like, it just flat out matters when you do it the right way, because it's intertwined. It absolutely screws up linebackers. It screws up safeties. It screws up the pass rush if you do it right. And I think that's how these guys are wired to coach the game.
The 11-on-11 sessions that they've done five total over 2 days. They've been heavier skewed toward run for sure in terms of what they're running out there in 11-on-11 offensively.
Yeah.
I can tell you, too, that each day they have what's called a group install period. It's 10 minutes, and they're just walking through things. By my count, maybe I missed it, it's a 10-minute session each day. They're able to get in probably a dozen to 15 plays that they're just walking through. One pass each day. Like, everything they're doing in the install is all run game right now.
You know what it is, Sean, too? I think this is where people make the mistake sometimes. It's that you don't – from team to team, yes, there are teams where they don't have to establish the run because that's just not the way their scheme is styled. But if you are a scheme that is dependent on play action and everything else, or especially if you want to close games out in the fourth quarter, if that's your preferred methodology, it's very, very effective. So Bobby Slowick had a preferred methodology where they should have been establishing the run, but he had no idea how to actually execute it
yeah.
or get it done.
Yep.
So this is, again, you're going to a new offensive coordinator who's got some of the same mindset of Bobby Slowick. It's going to do it in different ways. But crucially, yeah, if you're going to run that type of offense, then you damn well better establish the run.
All right, last one here for this segment. We'll do headlines in the next segment, but we've talked a lot about the coaching of the offensive line in this segment. Cole Popovich, at least in terms of the Q&A after practice, there have been more Cole Popovich questions in the first 2 days of training camp than there were Chris Strauser questions in 2 years of training camp. Understandably so, given the performance of the offensive line last year. Here's Titus Howard on his new O-line coach.
I say the number one thing is it's just more demanding. I say we let some stuff get by last year that wasn't good enough, but one thing about Cole, he's demanding and he's going to treat everybody and coach everybody the same way. And I think that's one of the biggest things in having a great offensive line coach. And I just know that his mentality rubs off on us every day because he's not going to settle for less.
Dude, you, Seth, you know that I love to play the let's construe this answer how I want to construe it game.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a professional at that.
Yes.
That's one that makes it kind of easy. Like they okay. Like, clearly, the Chris Strauser feels like a substitute teacher or something last
He's
year.
He's making a direct comparison.
Absolutely.
To what it was like last year. And look, this is – you think about it. And it's funny because, you know, football coaches will look at players and basically usually feel like, all right, if the guy has one foot in, one foot out, and he's not even sure if he wants to play anymore, that's probably – not the guy for us. You know, there's exceptions, obviously. But it's if somebody's not 100% all in, then it's hard to get the best out of them. And then you have these stories last year about how Chris Strauser was contemplating retirement, but then decided. I don't know if the Texans talked him into coming back. Yeah. If they did, why? Why? Because, okay, it makes sense. This is a guy who was contemplating retirement, thinking about walking away and being done with it, but he just shows back up to a job where you got to work 14 hours a day.
Yeah.
That's a big difference right there, man.
And that line played like a line that was playing for a guy who might not have had both feet in. You know, it was reflective in the product on the field. All right, Payne and Pendergast.
He was quiet quitting or something.
Yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday, day three, Texans training camp. We've got you covered. We'll have that in headlines. We'll hear from more from D'Amico Ryans in headlines as well. Astros lose last night. A big transaction in the NFL yesterday that makes – it makes me really glad I'm not the GM of the Houston Texans, because I would have made a bad decision a couple of years ago. We'll have that for you coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, let's do it. Texans training camp. We are live, day three, and we've been talking some O-line. We heard Titus Howard a little bit earlier. Talking about Cole Popovich. Here's D'Amico Ryans talking about the Texans' new O-line coach. How's things going so far this training camp, Coach?
Cole has done a great job of leading. He's been leading with intent. He's been leading with intensity as well. Like, it's the drill work. He's definitely on it. Like, it all starts there for me with O-line. It's about basic fundamentals and being consistent. And Cole has done that. He's been consistent with his communication with the guys. He knows how to be intense when he needs to be intense, and he knows how to love the guys up when they need to be loved up. So he's doing a great job of coaching those guys.
I think it boils down, we've talked a lot of O-line this morning already, but it's one of the biggest topics on this team. I think, Seth, just at its core, this is a group that just needed a kick in the ass more than
anything
else.
Yeah, you don't get old kick in the keister or the rump,
man.
Or anything an old football coach would say.
Yes, the fanny.
Keister, rump, yeah, get your fannies moving.
That's right.
That's what they needed. And they needed a little bit of it's going to be a fun team and a good team if it works out and it's an improvement. I think that it appeals to a lot of the grittier elements of a football fan. This is the kind of stuff you love to hear about. Last year, I remember during training camp last year, I started to get a little bit nervous when they were talking a lot on the offensive side of the ball about, like, yeah, hey, we already know this offense, so now we can do that, the more advanced stuff.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous because every single great offensive coach that you know, Andy Reid will say this, talks about how you have to start off from square one every single year. Hey, you just won the Super Bowl. Great. You know what?
Yeah.
You are not a good football team yet during training camp.
Right.
And that's why I'm glad it's all talk at this point, but we've heard that on both the offensive and the defensive side of the ball this year. But especially it matters on the defensive side of the ball because there'd be a tendency to think, oh, yeah, look at what we did last year, and now it's just as easy. We're just going to build on that. Every player and coach on the defensive side of the ball has said, like, we know that it's not just wash, rinse, repeat, that you gotta just build from the ground up again and figure out what team you're going to be this year.
Yep. So O-line, a big topic out here, day three. Now, I will say this, couple of things. It is raining out here today, so I don't know if it's going to turn into – it's a light drizzle. D'Amico's not afraid to practice in the rain. We know that. But this is supposed to be a day of fairly light work for the team today.
It's supposed to be light work. No. This is – Sean, it is big. Bigger than it should be. Because remember what happened last year? The offense was struggling most of training camp. But if there was any kind of precipitation whatsoever, including one of those days in Ohio, it was – it might not even have been actually raining. It was like a misting or whatever.
Yeah.
They were awful. They couldn't do anything if there was kind of precipitation whatsoever.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think a light drizzle let me see. Can they actually throw and catch the football in a light drizzle?
Good point. I'm here for it. So there's that. Also, and I don't know if this had been publicly out there, like as far as how the schedule lays out, but Nick Caserio said on Texans Training Camp Live yesterday with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer that the first padded practice is going to be Monday. So they're going to practice today. They'll practice tomorrow. That'll be the first practice that fans will be able to see on Saturday morning. If you're a fan looking to come out and see padded practices, it looks like you'll have to be part of the Monday crew. So that's kind of how things lay out. Nick even made the comment, Seth, of the gist of his comment was training camp doesn't really even begin until Monday when the pads go on.
It's so different. And this isn't me being a crusty old man talking about how much tougher it was back in the day. I think it's smart. I think the way football training camp was done in the past was just dumb. It was really stupid. It was really, it was just too much like actual physical pounding for weeks after week after week before the actual real stuff began. But it is not what it used to be. Most people listening right now that played high school football, you had a tougher physical ordeal in your high school training. Your two-a-days, your three-a-days, especially in Texas, where it's like, as hard as it is in a lot of places, Texas is just probably everybody's trying to reenact the Junction Boys.
Yeah.
It's not the physical challenge it once was, other than the level of competition. Everything, you know, makes it tough, but it's not a physical challenge the way it used to be.
Astros lose last night to the A's 5-2, first of a four-game set. So that sweep in Arizona flushed quickly. They lose to the – now, this Jason Alexander got called up to start the game, gave up 11 hits in six innings. Like, this is what normal looks like when you're calling a guy up to start a game from hey, can you just drive up 59 and start a game for us tomorrow? That's kind of – the Colton Gordon and Brandon Walter thing has been a complete outlier for what guys getting called up that aren't supposed to be here, what that's supposed to look like. So that was so they lose last night. Seattle wins – and Toronto wins, so they're now the Astros, who were briefly tied for first place in the American League for one day. They're now a game back. They're a half game up on the Tigers. They're five games up on the Mariners in the division. I think the bigger stories last night, probably for the Astros, Seth, is not the A's game, but it's Christian Javier with another rehab start, this time in Sugar Land. He and Jacob Melton both with rehab games last night. Melton, the outfielder, he's been out for over a month now with an ankle sprain. But the big one is Javier, who's 14 months removed from Tommy John, and he got up to 95 again on the gun last night. Threw 49 pitches, 30 for strikes, so his pitch count is starting to amp back up a little bit here. And they've got three guys, their entire series in Corpus this weekend, the Astros, their AA affiliate, all IL guys making rehab starts. It's Eric Geddy, it's Garcia, and it's JP France, all starting the games in Corpus this weekend.
If the Astros organization does one thing, they take care of the affiliates by way of just having so many injuries. I can hear.
I think it's just us, Seth.
Yeah. Okay. I can hear everything. What's going on? Oh, am I on air?
It's just you and me, Seth.
Okay.
Sean appears to be gone.
Are we on air?
Yes.
Oh, hey, we're on air. Woo! Look, okay. So it's 6:50 in the morning. Sean is gesticulating wildly and still doing the show without any of us knowing exactly what's going on. Ben, don't worry. I'm not gonna make you talk about Hulk Hogan, who passed away yesterday. That was next up in the news. Also, Christian Wilkins cut by the Raiders for apparently not handling his rehab the way that he was supposed to be handling the rehab. I wish you guys could watch on the YouTube stream so you could see Sean continuing on with the show the way he has. Hey, Ben, is it possible for you to pull up the Titus Howard 5 audio that we had in the previous segment?
Absolutely, I've got it.
Okay, let's do that. So Titus Howard spoke to the media yesterday. Sean and I spoke about it previously as we try to fix his technical difficulties, and it feels like a renewed Titus Howard. You can't tell too much about the offensive line when there's no pads on, but there's going to be an emphasis on versatility, which is something that I used to be opposed to because it felt like every time you try to move offensive line been around all the time, guys obviously aren't going to perform as well as in their chosen position. But it's a different world, and because of injuries and whatnot these days, you got to expect your offensive lineman to be versatile. Titus Howard's had to be that guy before. Ariante Urstry, the rookie, has played both left and right. Titus had some words of advice for Ariante. Ariante Ursary?
I tell them the main thing is just the mental part first. Getting in the playbook and learning how to be able to switch each play, flip it backwards. So, because that's the biggest part, getting up there. If you know what you got to do, the rest going to take care of itself. He's more than athletic enough to play left tackle and right tackle. It's just getting up there and knowing what he got to do right away so he's not thinking so much. And I think he's been doing a fantastic job on it. He's having a tremendous camp so far, and he's only going to get better. I feel like he's a guy that likes to learn from the older guys and the coaches and try to apply that to practice. I'm just excited to be his teammate.
The best analogy I've ever heard about the difficulty of going from the left side to the right side or vice versa as an offensive lineman is go ahead and try to wipe with your other hand this morning and see how that goes. It's going to take some practice. So I'll leave you with that as hopefully we get Sean back after the break. Okay. Hey, we got Sean.
How you
Sean,
doing?
I was just taking him into break.
Somebody unplugged. You know that scene in Airplane where
somebody unplugged the.
Yeah, you know the scene in Airplane where the plane's coming in and all the lights are there on the runway and then they go out and then there's that guy standing there holding the plug? I don't think it was intentional like that was an Airplane, but that's exactly what happened. Somebody unplugged us. Not their fault. They didn't know, I guess. But
why
did
he think that something should be unplugged?
Well, our power runs way down the wall to where the extension cord plugs in next to like the Jumbotron out here, and they were just... Yeah. They didn't know what they were doing. If they had known that we were connected to it, they wouldn't have done it. It was an accident.
Mike Meltzer did that to SiriusXM one. When we were in West Virginia for training camp, we were packing up at the end of our show, and Mike just completely unplugged the Sirius. He shut down SiriusXM NFL station for
If I know anything, Seth, about this business, it's that the higher up you go in terms of like the profile of shows, like local, national, satellite – the higher up you go, the easier and better they handle those things.
I'm sure it was just.
Oh, that's no problem at all.
Yeah. They got howdy about it, but I shut them up right quick. They thought there was going to be a bullying situation for a moment. I told them to sit their asses down.
Yeah. I love that. All right. So I'm back now. We got plugged back in. Matt, do these guys know not to unplug us the next few days? All right. Good. All right, good. All right, let's get to the 7 o'clock hour here. And let's hear from Aziz Alshire. This was great yesterday. This is something – Aziz Alshire said something that you can tell this is a D'Amico Ryans kind of guy, just in terms of working on his game. One of the unique things he did to work on his game, and Aziz's description of one of his teammates is fantastic. We will get to that. We got a long segment coming up. Payne and Pendergast with you live, I promise, from Texans training camp.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With a Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus. To kickstart your rewards, visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy. Issued by WebBank, in order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.
Well, full peek behind the curtain, because if you hung through that break, I feel like you deserve to know why that break felt like it was 9 or 10 minutes long. We had a bit of a power issue out here that has been resolved by our excellent engineer on site, Matt Irvin, and we just need a little extra time to get it resolved. So good job by him. Good job by you hanging through the break, and we're going to make it well worth your while, Seth.
Well, and just so you guys know that we're team players and we understand the truly important things. Turns out the football team needed the power to for their cameras.
Yeah.
So we said, all right, you know, things being what they are, we should probably just go ahead and let the Texans.
We did. We stepped aside.
Let the football people do what they need to do to actually practice today.
Yeah. Yep.
I would have loved if you just go over there and dress D'Amico down. Say, listen, Buster, I don't know who you think you are. But we have a radio show to do.
There was part of me, I'm like, they need the cameras now? There's nobody out here on the practice field. And Matt's like, yeah, they need the cameras now.
They need them now. And it reminds me of when I was in, remember when I did the pregame for the Bills game in Buffalo?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And I was up in one of the booths up there, which was right next door to the Texans booth.
Yeah.
And at some point, somebody ducked his head in and said, hey, Seth, coaches next door said you're, it's kind of hard to
can you keep it down
when you're being so loud. So I went out to do the worst pregame show ever because I was like, oh no, I don't want to screw up the team.
I think the keys to victory today are to not, for one, don't let them score 48 points at the beginning of the third quarter,
which
they will eventually do.
But it was that game where there was that huge downpour.
Yeah. Well, that was the David Culley year. I mean, could they blame you for getting that excited about the David Culley product that was on the field?
They should have been like, wow, Seth's really bringing it.
He's
we
into
suck.
It. He's into it.
Can't believe it. He's bringing that kind of energy and we suck.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Let's circle back to training camp here. Aziz Alshire met with the media yesterday, also did an interview with the guys on In the Loop that was really, really good. If you can go back and you can find that on the Odyssey app on the In the Loop podcast. This was from his press conference, though. I thought this was cool. Look, Aziz is a guy who, you know, I believe undrafted back in the day. Like, he is a self-made guy when it comes to becoming the player he's become. This was a cool story. He and Henry Toa were in Hawaii a year ago when Stingley and Stingley's dad were doing that kind of DB summit that they do every year where they get the DBs together to do coverage things and whatnot. They happen to be on the same island. Aziz got wind of that and said, hey, man, I want to go to that next time. I think this year they did it in Puerto Rico. So this is Aziz telling that story. But I thought this was cool, and it gives you the insight into what kind of player Aziz Alshire is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of both. You know, I think when Sting did it in Hawaii last year, me and Henry were actually just in Hawaii at the same time. So me and him were training together. And I'm like, man, Sting and them are in the same island as us. They're just on the other side. So I told Sting and his dad when I seen him during the season last year that I wanted to make sure that I came out there. Because it is, like, I mean, you're talking about obviously one of the best corners in the league now. And then all the other guys that were there as well, you know, just learning from guys who have to cover all day. Just like I learned from the D-line who have to rush all day. As a linebacker, you got to do both. So it doesn't hurt to sharpen your tools.
I don't know if Aziz Alshire, Seth, is ever going to become a great coverage linebacker, but the mere fact that he's got the self-awareness to go, and I think it's kind of creative, too, to go, you know what, I'm going to go do some workouts with some DBs to work on the coverage, because that was an Achilles heel for this team last year, was tight end coverage, things like that over the middle of the field.
You know, the big thing from off-ball linebacker, middle linebackers, the big thing for middle linebackers is it's not as much, hey, can you track a guy, you know, step for step downfield. It's awesome if you can, but those are rare. You know, Fred Warner being able to just cover tight ends down the seam and all of that, it's rare, and that requires a certain physical skill set. For most of them, a lot of it is, it's two things. It's one, recognizing play action and those keys. So understanding, okay, wait, no, this is a pass, even though it looks like run and vice versa. And then the angles and anticipating routes so you can get in passing lanes, so you can rough guys up before they make their break, all those kinds of things. It's very much a mental thing. So I am intrigued by Aziz working with defensive backs where, you know, a guy like Derek Stingley, one of the things that makes him so good is him being able to read the body language of a wide receiver.
Yes.
That when he had that pick, his first pick in the Dolphins game, he did a really good breakdown. I think it was with John Harris when they had him on, about just Tyreek Hill and the way he runs his routes, and it's a little bit unorthodox in some ways. And by the time they got down into the red zone, it was a situation where there was no safety help over the top.
Mm-mm.
And Stingley just flat out going on him, understanding Tyreek Hill's body language, jumped that route in a way that if he was wrong, it was an easy touchdown for Tyreek Hill.
Yep.
But he could just tell and he knew. So all of those little nuances, they really help for linebackers too, especially when you're kind of more of an old school run stuff and middle linebacker. You got to get really good at picking up on those little nuances of route running to just get in lanes, anticipate routes, and all those things. So I like it. I like
yep.
it. Also, I feel like the NFL has become kind of like the movie version of the NFL. That when back in the day, you might watch a movie and like, oh yeah, these guys are flung out all over they're working out in Hawaii or Puerto Rico, or CJ worked out in, was it France or Italy with some guys this year when he was off on vacation.
Yeah,
like, it's cool that they're living this jet set lifestyle, and yet at the same time actually probably doing more work than we did back in the day.
Diggs was in France last year. I don't know if that's what you might be thinking of. But
No. It was we remember CJ did that tour of the soccer club this year.
I think that was Italy.
Yeah. And I think I want to say he got together with somebody who was doing some workouts somewhere also.
That's
while
tremendous.
He was over there.
Yeah, I was
maybe I might be conflating that with somebody else's story.
I would
my
know
point
what?
Is it happens.
Yeah no, but these guys all like, you know CJ getting the guys together for workouts in California. Aziz just sitting there talking about like, yeah, Henry and I were working out in Hawaii and Stingley happened to be there. And then you got Will.
Yeah.
You got Will working out with Myles Garrett in the offseason. There's a lot of cool workout stories.
I think, honestly, this is where, as much as you might rail against social media or texting or anything else like that, social media and texting have been really good for the development of athletes.
Mm-hmm.
In that, one, coordinating stuff like that is just without group texts and things like that, it's just way more difficult and cumbersome back in the day.
Yeah.
And then because of social media, like when I watch pass rushers, I'd say partly because of social media, because of things like YouTube, I think, and how available video is in general.
Mm-hmm.
Pass rushing is almost a completely different art than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Guys are just so much more advanced and they understand so much more. They talk about things that I'd never even heard before 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like shin angle and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, yeah, sure, shin angle. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
No,
JJ.
It's like it's yeah. football's answer to spin rate, you know? Like it's
right,
it's...
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they break everything down anatomically and everything. There's
yeah.
moves that people are using a euro step. We barely knew Europe even existed when I was a football player.
That's right. Back in, you were just me get quarterback. Me get quarterback. Me get
Europe.
You.
I don't need to know about Europe. I'm an American. What do you think? Are you a commie? Ain't that where they these commies?
That's right, man. All right, here's more Aziz. I had forgotten about, you know, Nick Cayley has, is it FIU or FAU that Aziz went to? I forget, one of the Floridas, but Nick Cayley.
It was the Fashion Institute of Technology
okay.
in Manhattan, is
it
what
was. It was not. It was, but Cayley, I'll look it up during while we play this cut, but Cayley was actually at that school while Aziz was getting recruited. They never actually crossed paths there, but they actually formed a relationship that endured beyond just Cayley moving on to his next stop after that. This was a cool anecdote from Aziz Alshire yesterday.
Nick Cayley is literally somebody who's known me from the time I was a 16-year-old homeless kid. He's been to my motel that I lived in to now, you know, for both of us to be in the position that we're in, you know, literally 10 years later, I'm 27 now. It's just crazy, you know, because we kept up with each other. He actually never coached me at FAU. He left as soon as my class signed. He ended up leaving to go to the NFL right away. But he literally called me and talked to me all the time from that point forward. And you would have thought he coached me for all those years. And we never actually even coached together, coached and played together. But we always had a really close relationship, and he always kept up with me. So I'm grateful to have him here, and, you know, he's just an old friend that just reminds me of how far I've come as well.
FAU is what it was. You heard him say that in that cut right there, Florida Atlantic University. That's I just thought that, given Aziz's upbringing especially, I mean, he mentioned it there, he was homeless at one point, that Kaylee, who moved on, you know, eventually moved on to the NFL. I'm not sure if it was right after that or not.
It was. It was, because my first thought was like,
trying to poach you.
Good for Kaylee. Yeah. Kaylee was out there on the sly trying to, you know, trying to poach him from somewhere else.
They used to call Kaylee old transfer portal Kaylee back in the day.
He went to the Patriots immediately after Florida Atlantic.
Okay.
So he was genuinely just keeping up. Aside from no NCAA recruiting violations, he was also just keeping up with Aziz. Aziz's story is really cool. I mean, he was, like you said, at the point he was living in a motel while Kaylee was recruiting him. Mm-hmm. And I had flashbacks to what it's like is when you're in a situation like that and you're a kid, you're trying to play football and go to school and everything, and everything is just in turmoil. It's really impressive that Aziz just was able to stay on the path that he was on. And he was undrafted in a year where, remember, too, they had Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw, who were draft picks in San Francisco that were going to, you know, be the guys. And he really had to fight and scrap to get playing time and learn about, like, come up the hard way in a lot of ways.
No
and he plays like he hasn't forgotten that.
Yep. Here was Aziz Alshire. One more from him. This is just a great. Aziz is a good storyteller. This was Aziz Alshire when he was asked about his teammate Daniil Hunter.
Man, I've played with guys that, I mean, like, even like Nick Bosa was like a freak, but that guy is like fast. Like, Daniil Hunter is fast. He might be faster than most of the guys on our team. I think we were in practice during the season last year, and we tried to install some play. Long story short, Daniil Hunter was covering somebody down the middle of the field, down the sideline, excuse me, and he's running stride for stride with Joe Mixon. And he's sprinting, just, mind you, he's in a three-point stance, and runs from a three-point stance facing this way, and Joe's running a wheel route out the backfield and covers Joe all the way down the field and gets a pass break. Like, and my mom is like, dang, well, like, you don't even need that speed. Like, so, I mean, he's somebody who definitely is special, and he's my locker mate. So I don't know if anything that he'll teach me can make me look like him, but, you know, I'm just trying to get all the little nuggets from him that I can.
Okay. I thought it was funny that he said, you know, I don't know if I can look like him. Aziz was up there yesterday just wearing his sleeveless workout gear. Holy crap.
Oh yeah,
he does not skip a shoulder day.
You know, yeah,
and, he has never missed a shoulder raise in his life, I don't think.
No.
Yeah.
No. Seth, can you imagine the visual of Daniil Hunter running stride for stride with Joe Mixon on a wheel route down the sideline?
I can, because, you know, he used to do that sometimes, and it was usually in pursuit where he'd be impressed with his speed, was Jadeveon Clowney. Clowney would hawk dudes downfield, and he'd be running. Remember, he'd be running pace for pace sometimes with defensive backs
and wide receivers.
But Daniil's a more fluid athlete. Like, he's just a more he's a more pliable guy, a more bendy guy than Jadeveon Clowney.
He's freakier looking than Clowney, and Clowney's a freak, don't get me wrong, but Clowney's very top heavy. He's got that upper body, and he's got kind of skinnier legs. Like, Daniil looks like he was built in a lab.
That's where that was the one that people were kind of gawking at this year, was when Daniil Hunter said that he had gained a few pounds of muscle, and you're like, where exactly? Like, how'd you do that? You seem to be, I'm guessing it was just in his legs, just because that's something. Sometimes guys, I don't want to say neglect, but they underestimate just, like, how much they can do with their legs while still playing football, and you discover it later, and that helps you age better.
That's bad news for the rest of the league, man.
Yeah.
If Daniil Hunter is finding ways to further maximize the God-given gifts that he's got, that's bad news for the rest of the league.
Yeah. Oh, and I'll tell you, it's just a story. That's honestly one of the biggest things that changed in my career was I was in my, I think, fourth year in the NFL or fifth year in the NFL, fourth year. And just midway through the season, I wasn't happy with the way I was playing. And one day we were in a weight room environment where the strength coach just, you had you only squat a certain amount during the week. He didn't want to, you know, guys get tired, so he's like, all right, we just want to get you squat, not go too heavy. And I was like, ah, screw it. And I just went in and I just started doing, like, pretty much maxing out on squat in the middle of the season, you know, 10, 11 games into the season. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, I'm like, I just started blowing people off the ball in games. And I'm looking around like, why are people not doing this more? And it's the answer is because it sucks.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to, like, practice that day and everything. But that was one thing that, like, for the remainder of my career, I was lucky enough to, when I got to Houston, Dan Riley, the strength coach, was adamant about lifting your legs heavy during the season. On Monday, you got to fight through it and lift your legs heavy. And I was a completely different football player because of it. So I hope that Danielle Hunter maybe tweaked something with his leg workout.
It flipped that quick for you, huh? Like,
oh, yeah. Which is, I know that it's the advice I give to football players that I think is probably almost never taken. It's that you have to find a way to lift your legs really heavy during the season.
Yeah.
And you can come up with all kinds of excuses why you shouldn't. And it's like by the end of the year, it's like you're on steroids, especially in a 16-game season back in the day or a 17-game season now. The vast majority of guys in the league have come up with reasons why they shouldn't be, you know, lifting their legs all that heavy during the season. So you end up with a huge strength advantage.
I think,
but
you
it
know,
sucks.
The most interesting part about that story to me is that two things. One, you stumbled upon it. Like you were playing poorly, so you decided I'm going to do this, and it worked.
Not poorly, just not as well as I wanted.
Your
mouth.
I was watching. You were nothing. Trust me. Yeah, I was watching lots of Jags football back
then.
We didn't have a team, so I was watching a lot of Jags football. So that's number one. I thought, yeah, you weren't playing to your standards, so you went and you stumbled upon that. The other thing too is that you get drafted, expansion drafted over to a team that has a strength coach where that's part of his credo. That's what he wants you to do. And it makes me think to myself, like, there's so many variables that go into how good a player can become when they get drafted to a team. Like, did you at that point think, man, if I got drafted onto a team where Dan Riley was my strength coach, who the hell knows what I would be now?
Well, there's partly that. Yes. That was huge for me. And then the other part, and this is why I'm always open to when guys get traded, or even if just guys kind of just change something in the routine, that it can have a huge difference. In football, maybe more so than in any other sport, the scheme matters so much. So Dom Capers' scheme when he was in Houston, where he got to run his actual scheme, because he was my defensive coordinator in Jacksonville for a couple years, but we had personnel for a 4-3 defense, and Dom couldn't really do everything that he would normally do. Mm-hmm. So when we got to Houston, I was a completely different football player in Dom Capers' 3-4 scheme. And I was a much better football player just because it was a better scheme. In some ways, the coach was a better fit for me, the defensive line coach. And, so I'm always – Titus Howard, he's on the same team but with new coaches, different environment. And I think people are understandably skeptical when they say, really, how much of a difference are we going to see? I'm always very, very open to it. You know, Kenyon Green up in Philadelphia, it might end up being the perfect fit for him up there. Who knows? It's just, it matters that much, just a few of those different variables.
Titus is a great way to bring that back around to the Texans because, when they're trading Tunsil and they're cutting Shaq Mason and they're dumping Kenyon Green, I say dumping him, I mean, they got C.J. Gardner-Johnson in return, but clearly moving on from Kenyon Green. I think there were a lot of people, myself included, like, okay, why stop there? Like, clearly this was a disaster last year of an offensive line. They see something in Titus Howard. If they want to move on from Titus, they could have moved on from Titus. There's ways to work around the cap when you do those things. Nick obviously sees something in him even before this because he gave him an extension. So there's something there in the eyes of Nick Caserio. And now that D'Amico Ryan's had a couple years to keep eyes on him, I think some of it is they figure he'll maybe – be a little different football-wise with no Laremy Tunsil there is sort of the big influence in the room. And I think, obviously, Titus is a former first-round pick. There's plenty there physically to like. You just got to get it channeled in the right direction, right?
Yeah. And him playing guard and actually latching on and enthusiastically playing guard. Because I think it was always – and that goes back to, man – you know, with the influence of Tunsil, Tunsil was the ultimate business person when it came to getting paid and caring about that kind of stuff, posting about it basically on social media, that there was a part of Titus where it just felt like, man, he's so concerned with getting that offensive tackle money. That's what it seemed like on the outside looking in. Mm-hmm. Who knows if that? That's what it seemed like. That now I've been brainwashed by Bill Belichick because I read his book twice last month. But I really understand Belichick's philosophy now of the more you can do, how vital it is to the team success to have as many guys as possible that can play both guard and tackle, yeah, or that can play left tackle and right tackle in every single position. Those guys who latch onto that and realize and really understand, oh, my value as a football player is just amplified so much more if I can do multiple things. I think Titus has kind of gotten that into his head, and it's almost like he's become a preacher for it. Whereas before, he would say, no, I'm an offensive tackle, not a guard. It feels like now he's more happy and really embracing the role of, oh, yeah, I'm a guy that can do both. Yep, and I want to be that guy.
Yeah, and it feels like, you know, I'm just basing it on a press conference and what we've been observing. It feels like he might end up being a leader in that room, in that offensive line room. So we'll see. Hey, let's skip down. Hey, Ben, let's go to 13 for DeMeco here, because I want to make sure we mention Nick Chubb. We haven't talked about him a lot these first couple days of practice, and we probably should for a couple of reasons. One, he's the only guy that's working right now that's got significant carries in the league at running back. You know, Joe Mixon's on the non-football injury list. Damian Pierce is on the PUP list right now. So Nick Chubb is getting all the work with CJ out there with the ones and everything. I want to play DeMeco on Nick Chubb here and get your thoughts on this, Seth. Here is DeMeco Ryans on Nick Chubb so far as a Houston Texan.
Nick is only my fourth day with Nick, and he's done everything we've asked him to do. Like, he's a pro. Like, Nick has been the same guy. I've always admired Nick from when he was back at Georgia playing. I mean, always admired him, and it's no different. I can see why the guy's been good in his career. It's because he's a hard worker. He doesn't say much, but he shows you by his actions. Every single day he shows up, he's ready to go. So we'll see how he continues to grow and gel with our guys.
Now, just to be clear, when he says I've only been here 4 days with Nick, he's talking about two mandatory minicamp practices and the two practices so far as of yesterday. He's obviously been in the building for longer than that, but yeah,
right,
four
right.
practices.
Yeah, and I've seen mixed reports about Chubb and how he's looked so far, because I saw somebody yesterday say he looked slow and plodding, and I don't know if I agree with that.
I think
the person that said that may have been referring to last year, because he did look slower and plodding as a player coming off that injury last year when he played. He didn't look like the same version of himself.
Yeah, I haven't noticed anything. I don't have a real opinion one way or another on how explosive he's looked, because they haven't been doing much. They haven't been doing much that shows you what Nick Chubb looks like in an actual football game yet. You know what I mean? Like, it's all stuff in jerseys and a lot of walkthrough stuff. And the run plays, 11-on-11, in 11-on-11, Seth, you can glean a little bit more in the pass game than you can in the run game, just because there's no pads, you know?
The other guy, Juwar Jordan, who's done some good things in camp, I just remember this, that he's smaller than Stephon Diggs. So with Juwar Jordan, you have to take everything, especially in non-padded practices or in training camp in general, you got to take it with a grain of salt. There's some potential there, and it's exciting because he's as fast as a guy needs to be if you're 6 foot tall, 185 pounds, or 5'11", 185. But he's smaller than Stephon Diggs. So you don't look at him as a guy that's going to be he's certainly not going to be a three-down bell cow type of running back.
He looked good yesterday, though. I mean, he did, you know, that.
He looked
good
last year. It's just – yeah, against vanilla defenses with no pads and everything, that's not an indicator. I'm not saying he can't do it. I just try not to get too excited about it.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you on that. Payne and Pendergast with you live day three, Texans training camp. Rain coming down slightly harder now. We're working around it. It's all good. So we'll see if the Texans are outdoors or indoors today for practice. Either way, we've got you covered here on Sports Radio 610. Texans Radio will be out here shortly. In the Loop will be here 10 to 2. And they're getting players off the field. Ed Aziz yesterday, Will Anderson Jr. the day before that. They're getting A-listers when it comes to interviews. In the Loop is Reggie Atatula and John Lopez. We did not get to talk, Seth, about Christian Wilkins, because that's when the power went out for us during headlines. I think you and I were both probably sitting here talking about it, just not to each other. Christian Wilkins released by the Raiders yesterday, and this is one where I'm like, okay, glad nobody listens to me in the building. That's the guy I was campaigning for heavily during free agency
2 years ago,
2024. Yeah, heading into the 2024 season. Yeah,
he was. He was one of the premier defensive tackles available, and
he's a guy who got signed like 15 minutes into free agency, so right. You know he got paid retail plus 25%. He got 4 years, $110 million.
And remember free agency 2 years ago where the Texans would end up being one of the most aggressive teams in the league, especially when you add the trades to it, Joe Mixons and everything. That first day, Christian Wilkins was one of the guys that people were pointing to when they were saying, you got to fire Nick Caserio. You got to fire him. Look, he's not doing a damn thing. Why is he sitting on his hands? Why did he not sign this guy who's going to end up getting a cut a year from now rehabbing his ankle properly?
Yep. It's going to be ugly, man, for Wilkins and the Raiders. I guess a grievance has already been filed by Wilkins, but we'll bring the Texans into this conversation here in just a second. But 4 years, $110 million. It was about $57 million guaranteed. He still had $35 million in guarantees left they hadn't realized yet. I think a chunk of his salary this year and then his full salary next year, something like that.
Yeah.
The Raiders are trying to claw back that $35 million in guarantees because, as you just pointed out, Seth, they have issues with how he went about the rehab of his foot injury. From what I had seen, Ian Rapoport, I saw a report. He said that the team wanted him to get surgery. He didn't want to get surgery. He said, I just want to rehab it, and then they didn't like the way he went about rehabbing it. So they're saying he's in violation of the agreement. Christian Wilkins is going to try to get his money. I'm glad the Texans didn't pay Christian Wilkins $28 million a year. Even if he were good, I'm glad they didn't do that because I like what they ended up doing, which is bringing in Danielle Hunter, trading for Joe Mixon, making some mid-level signings with Azeez Al-Shaair, and we'll see what Denico Autry turns into. But those were the moves they made in that particular offseason. Should the Texans be at least looking into Christian Wilkins right now, Seth?
Oh, yeah, I think they should be, just to figure out what went on. Because there's a chance, it might be that – remember when Trent Williams had his issue with the training staff in Washington? And it's very easy to look at the player and think, oh, boy, that guy just doesn't, I don't like the cut of his jib. And it very well might well be that, he had a legitimate gripe against the medical staff there, and he's gone on to remain one of the best offensive tackles in the league for many, many years with San Francisco. So I would have to find out, all right, the Raiders are saying that he didn't handle his rehab properly. Did he have reason to handle his rehab the way he did because the Raiders were mishandling it?
Right.
And if it was the case, then 100% I'd be looking into whether maybe he'd be a good fit.
Yeah. I mean, the Raiders have paid the freight for you already. Now we'll see what happens with this guaranteed money. But this we know, Christian Wilkins coming off a year where he got sideways with his employer and has a foot injury, going to be way cheaper than he was when he was a free agent a year ago, and the Texans have a little bit of dry powder. I don't know. Like I feel 100% confident that this is a move that they're at least running the balance sheet on right now in there. You know, they're running the numbers on, okay, here, what's the injury risk? What's the locker room risk? What's the upside of all this?
You know? It's a classic get him in the building type of scenario.
I
think that I would expect Caserio's looking into it, and it's just a matter of, A, what is his actual medical situation, and then, B, what's the money going to be? I mean, Christian Wilkins probably isn't going to go out and play for the minimum this year.
No.
This isn't like a Cam Akers or a Nick Chubb type of situation.
No, it's not. But I guess the question would be, if you're Christian Wilkins or if you're the Texans, I think it was Middle Screen that pointed this out to me yesterday on Twitter, Seth, was, hey, look, try to get your hands on Christian Wilkins if you're the Texans, because if you don't, guess what? He's going to sign a below-market deal with the Ravens or with the Eagles or somebody like that. This is a classic, like, distressed asset that I think would ponder going somewhere where he's got a chance to win. He's been a Dolphin and a Raider his whole career. And he came from Clemson winning national championships. This is a guy who's experienced no important winning in the NFL yet. So that's my question, I guess, about are the Texans an attractive enough team right now? You're obviously doing it much more on spec if you're Christian Wilkins. If you're taking a little bit less because you feel like you can win a Super Bowl there, it's much more on spec for a team that hasn't made it even to a conference title game than teams that have actually won Super Bowls. But I guess that would be the question, would be, okay, the Texans certainly aren't going to pay market value for him if there's a big contract out there for him. Are the Texans a team that would be attractive enough for the two sides to meet in the middle on something? You know?
Yeah, I'm very skeptical that it'll happen, and just especially because the uncertainty of the ankle situation and exactly what I'd be surprised if it happened. If it did, it'd be cool. But I mean, for the Raiders to just cut ties completely, and that's with Pete Carroll coming in, where Carroll's inclined to. He's a pretty positive guy, you know. And he's,
I hadn't thought about that. That's a great point.
He's dealt with guys that are actual headaches on the football field before, but good football players.
Yeah.
That if Pete Carroll's deciding that it's time for him to go, I'm a little bit hesitant to think that, oh, yeah, but he's going to be a perfect fit with the Texans.
Do you think Tom Brady had any input on a move like this?
For those who don't know, part
owner of the Raiders.
Yeah, I don't know, because I've heard varying reports about how the people have overstated exactly how much he's doing with the Raiders, and I'm guessing no. I'm guessing Carroll probably is totally on a phone call relationship with Tom Brady, so he might have asked for his input on it philosophically, I suppose.
I'm guessing no. Like that, honestly, like that's one of those things that is symptomatic of a dysfunctional organization. If an owner, and especially a minority owner, not even Mark Davis, is coming in and saying, hey, this guy's a bad seed and he's not rehabbing right, cut this guy. Like this feels like a move like, let my GM and head coach do their job. And if this is what they determine to be the right thing, look, this is going to, if they lose the battle over these guarantees, this is one of the more disastrous signings that we've seen over the last few years.
In June, Brady had basically said that they use him as a sounding board, and that's where I could 100% see, Pete Carroll just talking to him about stuff like this.
Sure.
So he might have had input, but it's definitely not heavy-handed. He's available as a resource.
Yep.
He's not getting in there and meddling and necessarily saying, you guys need to do it this way, you need to do it that way.
Yep. All right, final segment for us coming up. We'll hand it over to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris as we sit out at a drizzly Methodist training center today for day three of training camp. An icon in the pop culture world passes yesterday, and C.J. Stroud, what did he learn from last year? We will get to all that coming up in the final segment before we hand it off to Texans Training Camp Live. We'll do that coming up next.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With a Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy. Issued by WebBank, in order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.
Couple things here. I want to get to C.J. Stroud, but I would be remiss as a lifelong wrestling fan not to mention Hulk Hogan passing away yesterday, Seth. Ron Trevino came out to my apartment building yesterday to chat with me about that for KHOU. I was on KHOU last night in my NWO hoodie talking to Ron Trevino. One pro and me in my NWO hoodie there talking to KHOU about the passing of Hulk Hogan, who is... I think whether you're a wrestling fan or not, undeniably, certainly one of the most iconic figures of like the 80s and 90s. And I think even as far as, up until yesterday when he passed away, one of the most recognizable people. Like if you just, the average human being, if you flashed a picture of him up, I think a lot of people would know who Hulk Hogan is.
Yeah. I didn't realize all of the various controversies that he'd gotten into in the last 20 years.
That's what some people. There's a lot of people that only know him for that.
Only know him from the controversy. Yeah. I didn't realize he was as much like the Iron Sheik as he was.
He was a little loose-lipped.
He was like the Iron Sheik character a little bit when it came to, yeah.
And ironically, that's who he beat for the title the first time back in 1984, where he basically vanquished the entire country of Iran by pinning the Iron Sheik in Madison Square Garden back in 1984.
Yeah. He also beat up Rocky.
He did. That was before. That was in 1982 in Rocky III when he was Thunderlips in Rocky III. In 1985, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Like, that's pretty big crossover right there. That was when wrestling was going through a huge boom period. And he was the star of it when they went from being like the WWF is a little regional company up in the Northeast to basically Vince McMahon taking over the entire wrestling world. The catalyst was Hulk Hogan. He was the star of that whole thing. He sold out pay-per-views and he sold out arenas worldwide. And then 10 years later with a different company, with WCW, he launches another boom with wrestling when he became a bad guy. Like it was the unthinkable. Hulk Hogan, the ultimate babyface, becomes a bad guy. And then, later on in his life, a lot of controversy. A sex tape emerged that, without his permission, he sued Gawker, which was the owner of Deadspin at the time, for $115 million and won. He won that lawsuit. And then I think that the other things you're kind of touching on there. Had said some unfortunate things through his last 5 or 10 years with us here. Racial and whatnot. But from an entertainment standpoint, few bigger than Hulk Hogan.
Well, he was also he was the first guy on record that that ended up saying that wrestling was scripted, right? When they were trying to get it, because they had to make it in a part of a court case to try to make it legal.
That was Vince McMahon.
It was Vince?
Yeah,
it
was Vince McMahon. I'll tell you what, business-wise, what Hulk Hogan is most famous for is that the wrestlers back in the 80s were behind the scenes trying to form a union. And Hulk went and snitched to Vince on the wrestlers
trying
to form a union. Yeah, that's probably the business thing. Other than the incredible piles of money that he generated, that's probably the controversial business thing that he might be most famous for inside the industry. Is he ratted out Jesse the Body Ventura was the one spearheading the charge to form a union for the wrestlers, and Hulk Hogan ratted them all out to Vince.
That's when I first knew that wrestling was scripted, because in a real world scenario that Hulk might have ended up at the bottom of a river.
right.
go against a union that's organizing for the iron workers or something. Luck with that.
Yep. So that was a big one yesterday. A few people have texted me, who are the guys that are alongside Hulk when it comes to like the biggest stars in the business, like just the biggest generators of business? To me, it's Hulk Hogan, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, and John Cena. Those are the big four. People are gonna say The Undertaker, and they're gonna say other people. In terms of just sheer pop culture crossover generating billions of dollars impact, those are the big four.
How did he what did he die of? Do we know?
Cardiac arrest. Technically was what it was, but he'd been sick for a little while. So his health has been. Look, he lived to 71, which in the conversion chart for wrestlers that came from the steroid era, like he did, and he did steroids. 71 is like living to 110.
Well, because it wasn't just steroids. It was steroids and speed and painkillers all mixed.
It was the 80s, man.
It was a rough scene back in the day. Yeah, it was a combination of all those things. And that's the day after Ozzy Osbourne had died, which another guy that nobody would have ever expected or anticipated making it to the age of 76.
Yes, his conversion chart, I did it, is 145 years old. He basically lived to be 145. Yeah.
That tracks. I think that he almost, if you're in your 40s or 50s, and you kind of got to watch, we got to watch it, Sean, you and I got to watch it from like when we were young kids. Ozzy Osbourne was like that scary dude that you'd heard had bit the head off a bat, and that's all you really knew about it.
Yes.
In San Antonio. Yep. And yeah, you knew some of it. You didn't know necessarily Black Sabbath or anything from back in the day. And then, but then you got to watch him transition into a reality TV show star as a guy who kind of shuffled around the house just being cute and adorable and funny and interacting with his kids.
And in commercials, you know, like it's different music genre, but it's a little like kind of like Snoop Dogg in a way. Like Snoop Dogg, when he was in the middle of his music career, if they had told you like, oh, he'd be this cuddly guy who's on all these commercials and everything, and like Ozzy Osbourne similarly is kind of a, you know, he's a pop culture icon for a different reason late in his life.
Peak Ozzy Osbourne for me was him and Lita Ford doing If I Close My Eyes Forever. Because that was right back when you might be, you know, recording music videos on VHS and using them later on for whatever, and just like Lita Ford. That was a kind of a pivot point for him in his career.
Yeah. Lita Ford, man, kiss me.
That's why I've remained sexually attracted to Ozzy Osbourne.
It's
kind of this association between.
Yeah,
them,
man. Yeah. You know, it's a big schmoz. You get lost in there. Like I know I'm attracted to something here. Let's get to CJ Stroud. This is CJ Stroud earlier this week. What did he learn from last year?
There's a bunch of things, but if I can probably narrow it down to one, I would say just, you know, trust the process, you know. It's not about what people think, who people think you are, what they think you are, when they think you should do it. It's all about, you know, your process and how you're going to go about it. And if God's happy, if your teammates are happy, and yourself, I think, like, then you're good. So I think that's trusting the process, whatever that is, if that's good or bad during the time. It's, you know, trusting, you know, what the coaches are doing and everybody around me. So
I think there have been times in the first couple seasons where it just feels like you can almost sense it in the press conferences or in interviews with CJ Stroud during the season where it feels a little bit like the weight of the world is on him. And that can sometimes happen to people that you have to learn early in the NFL that you can't be all things to all people. And you got to kind of just dial in and follow the cliches of just, you know, keep the main thing the main thing. Don't worry about what you can't control. Trust the process.
Yeah.
All of that. And they're cliches for a reason. It's because it's true. But it's hard to learn. And the other part about the NFL and for young professional athletes in general, I think there's a big part of just understanding and realizing that you're not – whatever your perceptions are of being a football player is – a lot of that has been shaped by movies and television shows. And learning, and I could say this for any profession. It's like learning that, oh, wait, that's the movie version of this job.
Mm-hmm.
This is how it actually works.
Yeah.
And this is the stuff that really matters. If you're a fireman or a lawyer or any other, or a cop, any other profession where they make a lot of movies about them, there's a point in your career where you realize, like, oh, wait a second. Okay, the paperwork actually is a big part of this job. Like, if I want to be really good at it, they don't show this in the movies. They just show the renegade cop who's whining about the paperwork and how he never does it, right?
Yep,
if I want to be a good cop, I just don't do the paperwork, right?
That's kind of a big deal. You got to file the report. Yep.
Yeah.
You got to file the report.
Riggs never did.
I just thinking when I hear CJ say trust the process, like somewhere Sam Hinkie's driving around, the old GM of the Sixers, the advocate of the process, like throwing his coffee at the radio. Like, I trusted the process.
Well, I'll give you, I mean, Saban was one of the first guys where it kind of made the process part of the vernacular, like just very much about the process. Another one of CJ's clips, he had just said that, you know, I can't remember I think the question was what his goals were or whatever it was, but his just win every day, win everything.
Yeah.
I've been so brainwashed by Bill Belichick. There was a part in his book where I think he was talking about the hours that he works and how he schedules everything, but he talked about how just everything, he almost approaches everything like it's a game, and it's fun to play games.
Yeah.
So it's just when he's watching film, when he's doing anything during the day, he's gamifying it, and he's approaching it like it's a game, and like, okay, how can I watch film better than the other guys, and what can I find out about this guy? So you get those little victories. It's a lot more fun. For somebody like CJ, I think, who sometimes feels all the weight of the world on his shoulders, there's times where you just got to break it down into like, hey, I'm gonna win this film session. Yeah. I'm gonna win this next period at practice, this next play, and you just stack up wins and don't worry about what the actual scoreboard is on any given day or throughout the season. It's just okay. I'm gonna win the next rep.
He would be an animal out over at Cidercade where they have all those video games and all the foosball and the pinball machines and the bowling and everything else. Be an animal there, man. Trying to win everything, CJ Stroud. All right, so we got day three of a practice. It is raining out here today. There are drops kind of falling on the table here, so I pray for Mark and John coming up in the next hit here at 8 a.m. But we'll get pads on Monday, so we'll see fans out here and tomorrow, and then the fans on Monday will get a look at players in pads. So we'll have eyes on it for you all camp long, but all day long here today. Keep it tuned. In the Loop, we'll be out here, Reggie Atitula and John Lopez. And hopefully the Astros get a win this weekend, Seth. Get a win, and so you and I come in on Monday, and we've still got the Mariners at a nice arm's distance from us.
Sean, and don't undersell it. Last year, the Texans' offense was miserable whenever there was any kind of precipitation during training camp. It was you could have bet money on it. Oh, it's drizzling. The offense is going to suck today. So if I hear reports, Sean, that it was the best day the offense has ever had, and they did it in a drizzle, I'm going to be over the moon about it. Yeah,
this is
a team that's advanced. Damn it!
I love it. All right, well, good deal. Well, we'll have eyes on it out here, Seth. Antibodies to you. Have a great weekend, my friend.
Antibodies to you, Sean.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable 6-blade shaves, swift rinse and 4 blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation while they collect dust? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With a Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy. Issued by WebBank, in order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.